This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rob Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to Station 2, and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, Soul-Free USA Canada, 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Tonight's guest, a former drone pilot, Brandon Bryant, is joining us to talk about the drone attack killings, innocent civilians, the irony and the falsification of the need of war. You can find out more about Brandon by going to his website, projectredhand.org. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Brandon, fill us in on the turning point of your job.
it was more of a gradual thing. It was more of a realization that everything was just continually getting more effed up the more that I was in, and it wasn't until, like, when I realized I just had to get out of the program and I couldn't do it anymore. The ironic thing is I was intended to leave the program and never have anything to do with drones ever again for the rest of my life. But it was when we were hunting Anwar al-Awlaki and I realized that it was an American citizen and we were violating the constitutional rights of an American being. And it was like, if we were willing to do that, what weren't we willing to do, you know?
Yeah, it seems like they don't care who it is, American citizen or not, if they label somebody a terrorist, or if they just want to go after somebody for any reason, all they have to do is label them a terrorist and then just fire a hellfire missile at them, I'm guessing.
It's not necessarily quite that simple, but it seems like that from the outside, and just the way that they handle things. I remember when we were helped capture a lot of people, but they were capturing people and then releasing them and then capturing them again. And I think people got tired of it, and we saw a lot more, a larger increase in kill strikes. And I don't think that we really questioned it when I was in. It was just the way things were. But I just couldn't – I didn't really know or understand what was going on at the time. And then once I got out and I looked back and I'd done research – and I met the people that had done, like, research into drone strikes about who they were killing, what they were killing, why. It wasn't really as clear-cut as they had told us when I was in.
Absolutely. You know, we don't really know why we're going to war and who we're killing and why we're killing them.
Exactly. Like, I feel like that's one of the things that people ask me, like, what has been my motivation for doing this? Well, they made me a murderer. I don't know who I killed, and they weren't the enemy. That's for sure. They had done nothing. They had done nothing to hurt me or others, as far as I could see. It was just I was told to kill them, and that in effect makes me a murderer.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm sure you were young and naive at the time when you enlisted, and I don't know if it was the patriotic thing, or was it a thing that you needed to do for finances, or whether it was just a gung-ho attitude that most of the younger crowd has coming out of high school?
It was a lot economic stuff. I didn't want to get into debt and going into college. I was already pretty smart, so I could do whatever I wanted. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. It was like, you know, who knows what they want to do when they're 19 years old. And I was dating a girl at the time who was like, I like a man in uniform. And of course, hormones kind of push you over over the decision-making point.
Yeah, they women sure have a way of getting guys to join the military, huh?
Yeah, good motivation, that's for sure.
Yeah, that it is. But actually, that was never my thing. I just, for some reason, to me, it was all about doing the right thing. But we've got a ton of questions, so let's move forward with that. Now, the setback to everything was the child that died in one of the drone strikes. Is that correct?
Correct. That was my second strike in early February of 2007.
Okay, and that was in Afghanistan, I'm guessing?
Yes, correct.
What is your whole outlook on drone attacks, and what is your whole outlook on the military, and what would you say to these youngsters that are becoming gung-ho and wanting to go because a girl loves a man in uniform?
You know, this is kind of where I've really had to reflect on personal responsibility and stuff. And, you know, we talk about warriors, and we talk about fighting for what is right. And this is where it comes down to the question is, what do you care about? Like, what is your exact motivation for doing things? If it's for care of country, then why are we responding in such a violent manner? Why are we responding in such a hate-filled, rage-filled manner instead of something of compassion? We're supposed to be the greatest country in the world, right? So why are we responding with such fear and with such force? And so in looking at it from that perspective, drone warfare is inherently cowardly. It's probably the most cowardly type of warfare that we've ever created, because the people that are perpetrating it are fighting it from all the way on the opposite side of the world with no actual repercussions to themselves. And I think that because of that, it makes people comfortable. It's like, well, our soldiers, our people aren't being put in danger, so we're all good. There's no price to pay for it, and so we make everyone else over there pay the price. So they're paying, like the civilians and the people that the freedom fighters or the insurgents over there, they're paying the price that we would also pay.
Right. And that, so in other words, the lives of other people from other nations don't matter.
Correct.
As far as they're concerned. Go ahead.
And so, like, I'm not against the military in this regard. I think that, you know, the military, the idea of volunteering for a military and serving your country has to be really looked at in that aspect of servanthood. And when you do that, you're willing to give up your life for your people, isn't, or for your friend or for your comrade, the guy who's fighting next to you, isn't that like a reason to fight with compassion? Because you understand that you might lose your life, your friend might lose their life, and you're gonna fight to protect something else with that. But isn't that the same reason that the people over there are possibly fighting against you? Where do we humanize our enemy in order to not have to combat them? And I think that's really what warriorship is all about, is understanding the nature of war and preventing it. And there needs to, this is how I guess officers should be viewed as, is because they study war, they go through college to be officers, but you don't really see that in the military anymore. It's about promotion, it's about money, it's about being a badass. It's from what I've experienced, it's not about like that servanthood. It's not about preventing war, preventing violence. It's not about bringing peace. It's not about building something. It's about absolute destruction, and I think that needs to change.
It's about absolute destruction, dollars and cents, and, you know, it's the industrialized military complex that is being built. But what scares me more, Brandon, is all these other types of drones, not just the aerial drones. We're talking about the robotics that they have on the ground that are also operated by pilots, such as you behind a wooden container or in a box somewhere. And this would just go out and kill people. So this, what scares me about this is that the robotics are going to be used by a small group of people to control the masses. And it's an even scarier thought. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it's kind of an interesting deal because I keep meeting so many interesting people around the world that are looking for ways to increase security and privacy of the individual, as well as creating a community for the whole. And the real solution to that is to just not give them power, to not be afraid of it, and to come up with solutions about this, because this type of technology might be cheap and easy to produce, but it's also should be, because of that, it's also easy to turn against the people that are using it.
Correct. I didn't even think about that. Thank you for bringing that to light. Brandon, question for you here. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to the military position, although that civilians are killed, drones have drones save troops' lives and money? Is that – whose troops are they saving? This is what I don't understand. And whose lives are they saving? These people think that they're saving lives, but they're not saving lives. They're taking out lives of other people. So they're saving the lives of American people? I just don't get this whole thing, Brandon.
That was one thing that people that I used to work with or my former peers would message me about and be like, "Well, we never really knew who we saved, but you should know that you saved a bunch of lives." And there's no proof of that. I might do a convoy escort and escort someone home, but I still remember my first mission that I ever did, and troops didn't come home. So whose life did I exactly save? And we keep removing this cost of war. We keep removing our human element from it. And if we continue to progress down this path, we're going to have autonomous robots making the decision how to kill other living creatures. And are we really willing to take the responsibility of placing the killing of another of a life, or taking of another life, out of our hands? Are we willing to not make the willing spiritual and mental sacrifices in order to do that? Because we need to understand that our enemies are human beings. They deserve the same respect that we would expect to receive.
Exactly. The whole thing about this, Brandon, even though I served, I did 10 years also, I still can't get it through my head. Where did the national defense empathy go? I mean, national defense and foreign offense are two completely different things. So how are we keeping ourselves free by attacking people in other countries?
It really doesn't make sense, because the people in other countries are human beings just like us. They struggle just like us. They're trying to support their families just like us. They have different methods of doing it. And if they are unable to live their lives and they have someone to blame for it, then they're going to, once they get to that desperation point, they're going to, not care. Like, you took from me what my life, so I'm going to take from yours. It's that eye for an eye will make the world blind type mentality. And with the people in charge, because they're able to make these decisions, they don't have to think about it, so they lose that empathy. Like when a command to fire a Hellfire missile is being given, the guy who's probably making the decision gets a piece of paper that says, "Hey, sir, can you please sign your initials on this, and so we can fire this Hellfire shot because we just found a bad guy?" And the guy's probably like, "Hey, sure, why not? Doesn't really know what's going on, probably signs a piece of paper. The disconnect happens because there's so many people with their hands in the pot.
Right, I understand. And also, but it's not just the drone attacks that's, you know, doing this. I was watching the helicopters, and they were just killing people left and right, and they were making fun of it. And also, there was these Blackwater troops that were killing everybody. I heard some of them got sentenced yesterday or something like that, but we don't know if anything will ever come to light as far as them really doing the time for their crimes. Do you know anything about that?
I just saw it earlier today, and you know, it's true. Like, these people need to stand account for their actions, and that's I understand that. I understand the need for that, and it's sad that it's spread so vastly, like a sickness in our military.
Yeah, it was like a sickness. It seemed like they were just going into pleasure killing.
Yeah.
And one response I got from one guy in coming back from Iraq, who just happens to be a friend of mine, he's like, "Oh, we got to kill all those towel heads." And I'm like, "Wait a second. What did those towel heads do to you? You know, you went over there. They didn't come here." "Oh, well, they did 9/11. I said, "Well, did you research 9/11? Did you research it properly to see who really did 9/11?" No.
Even then, we don't really know. Like, we make these accusations, and then instead of responding responsibly, we responded like a child. We responded like a child who had gotten hurt on the playground, and we're the big kid on the playground, and we responded in the worst manner to that. And people use it as an excuse. Like, how many hundreds, how many few thousand of our people were killed compared to the millions that we've killed in the last 10 years?
All right. On 60 Minutes, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Goh said that the military has resources to make drones even more accurate and more precise. Are they smart when they're talking like this? Is there really any preciseness to it?
He's probably just talking about stuff like software upgrades and that type of deal. But I don't believe that they can get any inherently better than what they already are.
Right. So once again, even though they have eyes, they still kill the wrong people, innocent civilians and everybody else. Yeah. Another argument is that terrorists in Pakistan. The Pakistani military kill far more innocents than the drones do, and I think that's also
that's an excuse. That's a justification. If we're going to, we need to have a higher standard for ourselves. We can't just say, "Well, because they did this, then we're like, look at how not shit. Like, these guys are shittier than we are. Look how not shitty we are." That's dumb. We need to the U.S. Air Force. You know, we have. What do they call them? Like, integrity first, service before self, excellence in all we do. We have these standards of where we hold ourselves, and we're not even keeping to our own standards.
Right. You're absolutely correct. We don't hold to our own standards. And then also, we don't question. This is the stupidity of most of the troops. We just go in and we do what we're told and, you know, follow blindly. We don't open up our eyes to what's going on. We don't try to understand what's going on. We're just, I would say thanks to the media, we're just put into a blitz to where we just want to go kick ass.
Yeah. And I think that has to do with, I think I heard Peter Singer call it militainment. You know, we've taken this idea that, and I think it really has to do with a lot of kids nowadays. They're trying to, you know, be a man, find their place in the world. And we have this idea where kicking down doors, shooting people, punching people, being unemotional, some sort of weird Tim Burton amalgamation of what a man should be, and that's not really the case. We need to have men who care, who want to protect and serve, men and women. But I see this a lot more from the men than I do from the women who join the military.
Right. Do you think that video games and everything has a lot to do with this conditioning to prep children to be desensitized to fighting wars?
Yeah, but not in the way that people really understand it. I've been, in the last few years, I've been trying to understand my own position and my own mental trauma and dealing with it. I've come to realize that there are certain instances when you look at video games where they do train people to react instinctively. If you look at the Call of Duty or military shooters, if you don't shoot the enemy, you die. You don't progress the level, so they train you to shoot at everything. It's instinctual. Everything that you do is, enemy. Someone pops up, you shoot him. There, you don't rescue anyone. You're not given a choice. But if you look at something like Grand Theft Auto, where you are given a choice to do stuff, most people who play that game and they do all the terrible things that they can do to other people, they're less likely to go out and do it in real life because it's a choice in game rather than instinctual. So you look at how you can teach people and train people through video games, and we're probably just barely breaching our understanding on how that's possible.
Right. Well, it's all conditioning. You're desensitizing people to seeing gory sights and killing, shooting at something on a screen and it's blowing up. And of course, the video games are getting more and more realistic to where they're almost human. You can, see people's faces in front of you, and you're shooting these people and they're getting blown up to little pieces and everything else, blood all over the place. So I call that desensitizing. I mean, when I was growing up playing video games, if I would see a cut on an old lady's leg or something, I would want to puke. But, after hunting and everything else and going through the procedures, actually killing something and, cutting it open and preparing it, I lost, I got desensitized to, seeing people bleeding. But I'm doing it for a different purpose. I'm hunting, I'm feeding myself, but these video games are really something else. And I think that parents need to take a look at those games and get their children away from it.
I do believe that parents need to be more aware of what their children are playing and the impact that it has on them. I would totally not buy a Call of Duty or Modern Warfare type game for anyone below the age of 16, unless they've had significant sitting down with their parents on, well, this is what this type of violence is. This is what it. I mean, regardless of how you interact with violence, it's going to affect you, whether you see it through a screen, whether you see it in person. And I think that's one of the things that people don't understand is, our brain is affected by everything that we interact with. And just because something that you interact with doesn't affect you or doesn't affect me, it doesn't mean that it won't affect someone else. So when we have these kids that are playing these shooter games that, that's all they do, they're going to go outside and they're going to react more instinctively with their environment. They're going to act more irrational, and instead of the types of games where they're given a choice, where if kids are given a choice to do something, it's been shown that, within the 10 minutes after they've gotten done playing with them, they're more mindful of what their actions are, rather than if they do go out and they play these instinctual games, they're more likely to be impulsive.
I see that in some kids, but then in other kids, I see them playing the game inside, and then I see them running around outside, shooting at each other with toy guns. I mean, we used to play with toy guns when I was a kid and everything else. We did the same thing, but it seems like there's more of an enticement for them to play these violent games, and they're carrying all these funky looking toy guns that they have these days.
But we're not going to get with the way that information technology is available. We're not going to get rid of this from our society at all. What we can do, though, is allow people to have a better understanding of how it affects them. And I think that, you know, education is incredibly important in this regard. Is when you know, parents need to be educated on how it affects their kids, and then kids should be educated on really how it affects them, and they should be made aware of what's going on and why they feel something after they interact with it. Because I used to play video games a lot growing up. I was really addicted to them, and I don't play them anymore. I try every once in a while, but I can't, simply because it's not even fun anymore. But like, I didn't understand how they affected me at all until I really went back in depth and looked at my own life and my own interaction with them. And then I observed other people's, and then I've done studies where I've read reports and research all about it, just so I would have an understanding that I can tell people about. And I think that that's something that we are, as a society, we just want to get rid of it instead of bringing that light and understanding to ourselves and other people.
Right. And the funny thing is, you don't really see any, unless they're video games for the really young children, you don't see anything that's a pleasant game for the kids to play that doesn't have any killing or blood or gory things. Right. I understand that. Education is the key to everything, just like the guns and everything else. You know, you bring your children up on guns and they understand what guns are about, they're less likely to commit crimes or play with the guns when the guns are put away. But when you don't educate your children, this is when you have the mishaps, because they think it's a toy, they pick it up and fire.
Yeah.
So I agree with you there. Anyways, you're listening to Rock Cash live on the People Speak. We'll be back in a few minutes with our guest, Brandon Bryant, former drone pilot. We'll see you in a few minutes.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty, yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak on the BBS Radio Network, coming at you live. This is Rock Cash with my guest, Brandon Bryant, former drone operator. We're here talking about all the bad things that happen in war. Brandon, my audience wants to speak a little bit about Chelsea Manning and also maybe Edward Snowden. And what are your feelings on Chelsea Manning? Let's start with him first.
I would like to let people know that Chelsea made the sacrifice that you should want people to make in the military when they see something that is wrong. And obviously there were things that were going on a lot more than we understand, but ultimately Chelsea did the right thing by releasing these documents beyond the scope of the military, because inside the military they wouldn't have done anything. No matter how high up the chain of command Chelsea would have gone, nothing would have been done. And so making the decision that she made was the right decision, in my opinion.
Do you think that she would be freed at any time, or they plan on locking her up for a long, long time?
I hope that the people of my generation and the people who are the people that are old enough to understand what's going on fight for her release, because she doesn't deserve to be in prison for her decision, because she showed us that there were people out there making terrible decisions that were negatively affecting and destroying lives, and she's paying the price that they should be paying. She's paying the price that these people that are the president and his cabinet and the Bush administration, all of these people that should be paying this price of being in prison for the rest of their lives, she's paying the price for them, and I think that is completely unfair.
I agree with you 1,000%. And Snowden, what do you think about him?
I think that the guy has the greatest amount of courage that I've ever seen in my generation, and I hope that he's an inspiration. Him and Chelsea both are inspirations. Those guys are inspirations for me. Even though I started speaking out before Ed Snowden, what he did was so much vastly more important than me, because I'm just some kid who experienced this firsthand and talked about my experiences. They've released reports, they've taken information and made it proof. And if it wasn't for these people, I would have nothing to say.
Oh, that's great. I agree with you. I think these are truly patriots for the American people. Majority of people think patriotism is joining the military, being a cheerleader for the military, and going to war. For people that are just making money off of our suffering and misery.
Mm-hmm. So could I actually read you that quote that I was telling you earlier?
Oh, yes. I was going to ask you to do that.
A little backstory to this. It was 2008 when I first read this, and I was having really difficult time in the military, not sure if I wanted to stay in. The people that I was working with, they were just terrible people. They were hurting me. Just all of these things were in. And I came across this saying by Mark Twain, and you know, I read it every day, and he wrote, "In a republic, who is the country? Is it the government for which is the moment in the saddle? Why, the government is merely a temporary servant. It cannot be its prerogative to determine what is right and what is wrong and decide who is a patriot and who isn't. Its function is to obey orders, not originate them. Who then is the country? Is it the newspaper? Is it the pulpit? Why, these are mere parts of the country, not the whole of it. They have not command, they have only the little share in the command. In a monarchy, the king and his family are the country. In a republic, it is the common voice of the people. Each of you, for himself, by himself, and on his own responsibility, must speak. It is a solemn and weighty responsibility, and not likely to be flung aside at the bawling of the pulpit, press, government, or the empty catchphrases of politicians. Each must, for himself alone, decide what is right and what is wrong, and which course is patriotic and which isn't. You cannot shirk this and be a man. To decide it against your convictions is to be an unqualified and inexcusable traitor, both to yourself and to your country, let men label you as they may. If you alone of all the nation shall decide one way, and that way be the right way according to your convictions of the right, you have your duty by yourself and by your country. Hold up your head, you have nothing to be ashamed of. It doesn't matter what the press says, doesn't matter what the politicians or the mob say, doesn't matter if the whole country decides that something wrong is something right. This nation was founded on one principle above all else, the requirement that we stand up for what we believe no matter the odds or the consequences. When the mob and the press and the whole world tell you to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree beside the river of truth and tell the whole world, no, you move.
Wow, that's absolutely beautiful. And I wish that a lot of people would understand the Constitution and understand what the Constitution really means and realize, I don't know if you remember the Murrah Building bombing and the Waco thing and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that a lot of our rights were taken away by the government because the government pretty much did this to take down a militia group that was rising against the government, and they took away the rights to overthrow the government. In other words, they powered themselves. They yeah. gave them the power by creating laws to take away the power of the people. And that, of course, George Bush followed suit with the Patriot Act. People really do not understand what's going on around them. They don't see... I'm guessing it's because they're put into a lot of fear by the media.
I've learned this interacting with my civilian friends and even my girlfriend, that a lot of people don't want to know what's going on because they have no energy. They go to work 40 hours a week. They commute 10 hours a week, and then they come back to their home. They don't want to watch TV. They don't want to do research on the internet. They don't want to be burdened with anything outside their own worldview because it's just too much of a burden. It sucks. It makes their life miserable. Like, they don't want to live it. And so they ignore it and they escape.
Right. I've got a question from an audience member, and she wants to know, she read that in Saudi Arabia, 1,200 airstrikes in Yemen. Does that mean 1,200 bombs, or does each airstrike just mean a bunch of different bombs at a single time? I can answer that, but go ahead.
I think it's just 1,200 different strikes, like individual strikes.
Oh, so each one would be an individual missile, not a bombing sortie.
Okay. Correct.
Good, good. John in Arizona. Oh. We already went through that, so we'll. Patty in Florida wants to know, what country was it where you accidentally killed a child?
That would be Afghanistan.
Okay. Go ahead.
The shots that I fired, it was Afghanistan, Iraq, Afghanistan were the ones that killed people.
Okay, so it was four shots that you fired that actually resulted in murder. In a sense. Yes. I'm not calling you a murderer by any chance.
You can call me a murderer. I accept that term.
Okay. Well said, then. You're taking responsibility for your actions, which a real soldier should do. by the way, and I commend you for that, and I'm sure our audience commends you for that. Tell us about your website and what you plan on doing in the future with it. I know you're pretty much putting everything out there so people would wake up a little bit, but tell us about it. Tell us about your team. I hear you have a very hot-looking girlfriend.
Yeah, she's pretty good. She's pretty good looking. Well, my team is just a bunch of people. Just people that I. There's a lot more than are on the website, and I everywhere that I go, I meet people, and I present them this idea. What I want to do is I want to teach people of any walk of life what it means to be a warrior, what it means to actually understand what violence does to you, what it does to the people that have violence done to them, as well as the people who do violence, and then take that knowledge, especially the knowledge of what's going on in the world, the wider array of things that are going on, and go out into these and solve these problems. You know, if we can understand what nature or what the nature of violence does to us psychologically, spiritually, and physically, we can prevent violence. And so what I'm trying to gather people from all walks of life, of all different viewpoints, and coalesce them to something that is manageable for the average person to digest.
Awesome. That's a very, very commendable way about going about it. But how do we get these people to listen? How can we help? How can people out there help to try to wake up people and you know, get them away from the violence?
It's for the people that I'm looking for. It's not the people that are trying to get away from the violence. It's the people that are trying to understand and prevent the violence. So we're looking at it as in the nature of all the warrior peoples of all the worlds. If we look at these castes of people in all sorts of different cultures, they were a culture within a culture. And right now in America, we have the largest separation between our military members and our average civilians, because we have military members going overseas, you know, essentially becoming awakened through a very violent process and coming back and being disconnected and unable to integrate back into society. And this way we're exposing people to this, no matter what happens. Like, so many people out there, they just don't want to, you know, they understand, like, okay, we're fighting overseas, we don't want to hear it. But really, these are the people that need to hear it. Like, you need to hear this so you understand, and that sadness that you feel, that weight that you feel, is very appropriate, because that means that something is wrong. But that means that we're here to offer a solution. We're here to help you understand it so that when something happens, you have the capability to address it.
Well, that would be a great thing, but I think what we need to do is we need to find a way into the homes through different means, because some people, no matter, and I'm sure you've seen this, you can hit some people over the head with a book of knowledge and they still won't get it. They don't.
Right, and it's just like, okay, so that's kind of where – those aren't the people that I'm interested in. I'm not going to waste time on people that aren't going to listen and that aren't going to be affected by this. I want people that are interested in making positive, real change in this world. And, you know, you've heard the 80-20 rule, like 20% of the work or 20% of the people do 80% of the work. I'm looking for those 20% of the people that are willing to, you know, serve. Like, we need real servants. We need people that understand what's going on, and those are the ones that are going to spread the message, and those are the ones that are going to help. Because there are a lot of these people, they can't take what violence does, and they're the ones that are having the birthdays and raising the children and living their lives, and we need people to be able to do that. We need people to be able to live as normal, free human beings, while the rest of us, you know, make sure that they can do that. And there's enough pain and suffering in this world without us adding to it.
Yeah, it seems that a lot of people don't understand that. You know, they're bogged down with patriotism.
They are. And
how can we break that? I mean, patriotic is a good thing. I love my country. I want to defend my country. But I'm not going to murder people that did nothing to us to defend my country.
Correct.
Because I'm not defending anybody by going somewhere else to kill people.
And here, like, I think we're one thing that we have going on in America is we have pride that gets in the way of our patriotism. We need to be humble. We need to understand that we are the biggest country in the world. We are the most powerful country in the world. And with that comes the amount of humble responsibility that we, like, with great power comes great responsibility. I don't know if you've heard that before, but, you know, it's a mantra that's true. I mean, it was around before Spider-Man was ever created, and it doesn't make it any less true that there's a superhero that lives by that mantra. And so we have to take this ideal of ourselves, and we have to raise the standards of who we want to be. And that is how America is going to change. That's the only way that America can change.
Oh, I'm hoping so. And I'm hoping that people would understand that we don't need to fight for our freedom. We are already free.
Correct.
So why do we have to fight for it? We have to fight to keep it. Who's taking it from us? Nobody is attacking us and trying to take it from us. So this, people don't understand, and they need to be able to separate that you can't fight somewhere else to keep yourself free in this country. You need to stand up for yourself in this country to keep yourself free from tyranny.
Correct.
People are not willing to understand that. But, you know, the old saying, you can lead people to water, but you can't force them to drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else that you would like to add to this, Brandon? Anything else that you think people can do for your site? How can they help you? Please let us know. We have an audience out there that is very informative as to what's going on, and maybe they can become volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, I just started this thing. I have this idea, and I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm just doing it and seeing where it goes. So if anyone has, you know, advice or, I want this to be a nonprofit. So if anyone can give me advice on that, I would greatly appreciate it. I want to serve not just my country, but I want to serve the rest of the world in doing the right thing, as I feel it's my duty. It's my duty to make sure that what has happened to me and other people's because of my own actions doesn't continue to happen. And if anyone can help me in that regard, or if anyone has any ideas on how I can do that, I would be very pleased and very humbled for your contribution.
Great, great. We'll see what we can do about getting you some of those people. I have another question for you, Brandon. Are you familiar with the chemtrails and everything that's going on out there?
Not really, actually, I'm sorry to say.
Okay. One other question. How much of the military do you think might be bought out, or are most of the military personnel still loyal to the citizenry of the country, or are they just loyal to the government? Because I've talked to some idiots that are coming back, and I asked them, well, what would you do if there's a uprising between the people and the government? Who would you stand with? And they're like, I would stand with my government. They don't understand that they're supposed to stand with the Constitution, that the government could be labeled as an enemy also, but a lot of people don't understand that.
I think that... Yeah, that's one of the scary things is when I got out, when I first started speaking, I would have hands down said that, you know, every single one of my peers, or at least 90% of them, would, you know, disobey an unlawful order, or they wouldn't turn against the people. But after my interactions and the messages that I've gotten after being public with my stance, my viewpoint, I'm not really sure anymore. I don't trust the people that are still in the program as being anything other than drones. And, you know, that's another interesting thing is I've never gotten a threat or hate message from anyone outside the United States. And the only people that threaten me are people that are still in the military, former veterans, and extreme right wing conservatives, Christians. So who's the real enemy in that regard? I've got people thinking me. I've had members of extremist organizations overseas tell me that, like, they wanted to kill drone operators, but because I've humbled myself and I've shown them that the drone operators aren't the ones that are making the decisions, it's the leadership, that they're not going to, they don't want to hurt drone operators anymore. And most people are tired of fighting. They're tired of the violence. They're tired of all the bullshit. And I think that we need to really look at ourselves. We need to take a really big look at ourselves and who really is our enemy and why are we fighting? And is history going to look at us favorably, you know?
Well, yeah, who knows how history is going to look at us. It seems like a lot of history has been falsified throughout the years, and we only understand what we're told, and from my understanding, a lot of the history is actually not factual at all.
Yeah.
So I think that we need to do something for the people, because the people need to wake up and understand what is really going on. And I don't think that this revolution is just going to be here in the United States. I think it's going to be a worldwide revolution, and it's happening all over the world except in the United States right now, where people are becoming anti-government and they're more speaking about it more. And I believe that there's a lot of groups here in the United States that are, you know, showing concern and everything else, but none of this makes it through the mainstream media to the people because they don't want them seeing what's going on. The best way to keep your enemy in the dark is to not let them know what's going on, because if people wake up and understand what's going on, they might wake up, and they don't want that. Not in any means.
I think that you know, Albert Einstein says that he's like, I don't know what World War III will be fought with, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. And I think that World War III is pretty much being fought over our intellectual and spiritual rights as human beings. You're right, it is a worldwide thing. And because of the way that technology is at right now, they're trying to stop our ability to communicate with one another. And I think that the internet is one of the only things that's keeping the quote resistance afloat.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're coming up on very little time here. So we've got a few minutes left. What I'd like to talk about next is the killing of this American. What was the reason that they were killing this guy? He was a Yemeni from America, I believe.
Anwar al-Awlaki?
Yes.
So Anwar al-Awlaki was an imam, a very high-ranking guy, a very peaceful guy. When 9/11 happened, he was talked about how the people who attacked us weren't Muslims, they were extremists, and that the Muslim community should support America in finding peace or vengeance, I guess, with what's going on. And he became a terrible person. He became a dick. But that still doesn't mean that he deserves to die. And there's a lot more behind who this person is than what a lot of people think about, but it's easily Googled or searched for on the internet. And the real tragedy is when he left over there and tried to come back, the United States took away his passport and then hunted him down. And his son, who missed his father, went to go look for him, was killed 2 weeks later after having not seen his father. after, and I couldn't tell you why they killed him, because they didn't want to make the kid a martyr. The kid was in an easy position where he could have been made as an example, and instead of having to deal with the consequences of their actions, the United States just killed him.
Mm-hmm. One other question. What do you think about the whole hoopla them actually saying they took out bin Laden?
So that's an interesting thing, because when I first joined, or not first joined, but in 2007 when I deployed to Iraq is when they had found bin Laden, and they'd been following him since about then. And he wasn't called Direct Objective Geronimo. He was called Objective Beast. Take that as you will. So they had no, like, directive. If calling someone Geronimo means that you've given your enemy respect, but calling your enemy a beast means that you've just labeled him as something less than human. And they hunted him down, and it seems so bizarre. You know, it just doesn't make really any sense that they would go in and kill him right before he died, because they didn't want him to escape without, you know, American justice. And I'm really sad that a fellow Montanan from Butte, Montana, has been bragging about killing this guy and taking credit for it, because, you know, someone who's a SEAL, someone who would be in that position. And I've met some SEALs. I met SEAL Team 3 once. I worked with them once. And they were extremely respectable and intelligent men. And I would not have expected this type of...
You're talking about Chris Kyle.
No, Chris Kyle was from Texas, but there's a guy from Montana who's bragging about him being the one to have shot Osama bin Laden.
Well, it would be kind of hard, since Osama bin Laden died in 2001 of Marfan syndrome. You know, many reports of Osama bin Laden being dead way before. I don't believe that there was an actual attack. I believe it was a publicity stunt to brighten up Obama's day, because of everybody was questioning his feasibility of being a president in the United States.
Hmm. I've never heard that before, but that's an interesting theory.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember about Donald Trump asking him for his birth certificate.
Yeah, I do remember that, and the whole while over that. Yeah.
Right. So overnight, people were questioning his birth certificate. And then Osama bin Laden, he captured Osama bin Laden, and everybody forgot everything. And
yeah.
But I think people were threatened to stay quiet is more like it.
Classic misdirection.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Brandon, thank you very much for coming on our show. People, please don't forget to go to Brandon's site. It's called projectredhand.org. Help out as much as you can, or help him with information on how to run a nonprofit organization. And Brandon, hopefully we'll have you up back on again sometime in the near future. And don't forget to join us here on the People Speak next week, as we have Max Geller.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome, Brandon, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Have a good night, people. We'll see you next week.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.